My name is Ryan Stacey, and welcome to the Hockey Minds podcast. This podcast is powered by Instat, the leader in video and data analysis. Instat Hockey supports all levels of our game worldwide with video breakdowns and/or scouting services. For more information, you can visit Instat on the web at instatsport.com or on Twitter at Instat Hockey. Today I'm joined by Chris Horn, Director of Hockey Operations with Army West Point. Having worked in multiple coaching positions to date, Chris offers a great story which shows the path in hockey operations takes a lot of sacrifice along the way. His great personality and insight go hand in hand, making this a great interview for our listeners. With that, here's Chris Horn, Director of Hockey Operations with Army West Point. The second round is in full swing and the action increases from game to game. This is where the contenders are separated from the pretenders. To give you some skin in the game, DraftKings will be offering free-to-play pools every day of the basketball playoffs, offering players a free shot at up to $10,000 in total prizes. That's up to $10,000 in total prizes up for grabs each day, and the best part is it's free-to-play. DraftKings free-to-play pools are easy to enter. You just download the DraftKings app, go to pools, and choose from a wide variety of free contests for an opportunity to win cash prizes. All you have to do is answer a handful of questions around what you think is going to happen during that day's basketball games and track your results throughout the evening. Questions will range from which team will hit the most threes to which team will score first. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up to get your free shot at up to $10,000 in total prizes every day of the basketball playoffs. Head to DraftKings pool page to get your shot at huge cash prizes. That's promo code THPN for a limited time only at DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Today on the podcast, we're joined by Chris Horn, Director of Hockey Operations with Army West Point. Chris, thanks for joining the podcast.
Yeah, I really just wanted to thank you so much in the humblest way, Ryan, and to the Hockey Minds listeners out there for having me on today. I really love this podcast. I think it's a great platform for those starting the business and thinking about getting into the business to gain so much valuable insight from people that are living it day in and day out from so many different facets of the operation itself.
Yeah, no, I'm ecstatic to have you on as well. And we kind of talked here a little bit before. You know, you were kind of on my short list with your various experience, which listeners will get to hear today. But, you know, through this podcast, we get to hear so many unique stories. And the NCAA always seems to be even more unique. I feel like there's a lot of people kind of looking in that route. So to see someone get to your position, it's, you know, like I said, even more interesting to kind of see how you got there. So before we get into maybe some of the specific things that you've done and the places you've been, let's start off from the beginning, maybe tell people about your upbringing, playing sports in your early years, and just give some more general info on you as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. But before I get into that, like I got to tell you, you just had a few recent guests on in Luke Strand and Cole Schultz that were just brilliant to listen to, and hearing their takes and getting their perspectives on everything that coming straight from their minds was incredible. Definitely tough ass to follow for sure. So I'm just hoping today that somebody out there can pick up at least a shred of insight on something I might be able to share with my experiences. But I'm hoping that I can make some sort of effort in setting the bar kind of high for Corey Beer and Adam West, who I think are coming on in the near future.
Yes, for sure. No, they're coming on, and Justin Pereira will be released just before this one as well. So a number of great hockey minds there, and ironically coming from very different backgrounds and all different leagues, I believe, unless I'm forgetting somebody there. So no, definitely a lot to offer, and I think listeners should definitely tune into all of them. Maybe a quick plug for listeners to chime in as well.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. So just to kind of circle around your question there, my upbringing, you know, my early years, I'm originally from Westland, Michigan. And those listeners that aren't familiar with Michigan, it's a Detroit suburb. So all my Michigan people out there, D-Town, I was raised very blue collar, working family. My dad would leave the house for work at, 6:30, 7 a.m. and didn't get home till about 6, 7 at night. He was a truck driver, and my mother worked nights. So completely opposite schedules. As a kid, basically I lived outside playing pickup sports with school friends, street hockey, football, baseball, everything, you name it, playing until the streetlights came on. Right. So, I actually, oddly enough, didn't start playing team sports, until I started ice hockey, and I started pretty late. I didn't start playing hockey till the age of 11, if you can believe that. So, for me, I played a couple years of house hockey. Then I played, 2 years of travel, and then was fortunate enough to get noticed by some coaches at Culver Military Academy, where I ended up playing varsity hockey and football, and graduating from the academy there in Culver, Indiana. Unbelievable experience that obviously has played a big part in not only shaping who I am today, but helping me get into different facets of this business.
For sure, for sure. And it's kind of crazy to think about maybe some of the stops that you've had en route to where you are today, but always very interested in hearing the beginning and how it kind of started. And it's not always a early introduction to hockey or the team setting early on for you. It was, age 11 for people who generally think about playing hockey and being involved in it to the degree that you are. A lot of people think that, the minute you walk, you need to be on skates, but it's definitely not always the point, but it was still a part of your kind of upbringing. And again, that would kind of lead to future opportunities. And for you early on, that was coaching. So let's go into that first opportunity with the East Side Stars. And maybe the experience of coaching at the high school level and just walk us through that experience.
Oh, geez. It's crazy to think that was almost 13 years ago now. I think fall of 2008, I reached out to Travis Van Tegum, who's now a close friend, still coaching in the Lansing, Michigan area where I was living, graduated from Michigan State. And at the time I was managing a public facility, just outside campus there. And so I was in the rink every day, kind of, doing the rink operations side of things. And really at that point I was pretty young, fresh out of undergrad, thinking that, managing rinks was kind of the career path I was going to follow. But I got really interested in, I think at the time we had 4 or 5 local high schools playing out of our facility. So being in the rink all the time, I just wanted to be a part of that somehow. I had never coached anything outside of, summer camps and clinics and pickup hockey and things like that. But I approached Travis and asked him if I might be able to give him a hand. And fortunately for me, he was more than receptive and brought me on. And then I ended up being there for 4 years, two under Travis and two with Scott Curley. Incredible experience for me, though. As much as I love working at the college level, because it's just a different type of intensity, there are definitely days when you miss kind of the funner aspects and part of coaching high school, because those players are just so moldable at that age, as they're like sponges. They kind of soak up every little ounce that you feed them. And there's definitely days where you miss some of those aspects.
For sure. And I've been able to kind of get involved with coaching that age group, and it could be a lot of fun. You get a different, different scale of kind of athletes. Some guys are really maybe looking for that professional or that next step, and some guys are just there for a different reason, but you're still able to learn a lot as a coach. And early on, that sometimes it can maybe make you think maybe this isn't for me, but for you, that was definitely the case, that you wanted to pursue it and keep moving forward. And the next opportunity we'll kind of go into here is with Michigan State University. Just again, talk about the transition and walk us through the entire experience with that program.
Yeah. What a wild and crazy experience that was. So it was kind of like such a fun yet strange way it all came together. So coaching the East Side Stars, which was the co-op I was helping with in the area doing the high school thing, I had a parent of one of the players that I had coached with that team by the name of Don Headley, who eventually became our head coach for the Michigan State ACHA Division III program. He had approached me about helping him start the program from the ground up. We both kind of laugh about it now. We had no idea what we were getting into, no idea the hours and commitment it was going to take or what we would end up with. We just both were passionate about hockey and kind of continuing to give players in that area more opportunities to play the game at higher levels. So I was able to work with players that we originally anticipated we might get a small turnout, but this team that we fielded that year bonded so well from day one. We ended up actually making the national tournament in year one, and looking back on it, definitely had a handful of players that could have gone on to have very successful Division III careers, maybe even walk on to the D1 level. We were fortunate enough to get some serious talent. I guess that's kind of the bonus of being at a Big Ten school with roughly 40,000 students at the time. But I ended up doing two years there as an assistant, also pulling double duty because I was still doing the high school thing. I was working full time at that time, driving for FedEx. So just crazy hours I was putting in. But what it ultimately did for me, looking back on it, was that was the first time in my coaching career where I developed that hunger to really switch my mindset to, okay, can I now chase this as a full-time career? Can coaching be something that not only pays the bills, but that I just do every day and can call work?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, sometimes they don't make it to that stage, but everybody definitely has it in the back of their mind that someday, if the opportunity presents itself, they'd like to be a full-time coach or even working in operations full-time. And unfortunately, sometimes it's not feasible, but if you work the hours and make it happen, like you said, you kind of had to coach two teams and work for FedEx at the same time. I think that's the grind that a lot of people aren't willing to do early on. But to be successful, you do have to go through that process and that stage of the coaching career.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Paying your dues, as they call it in the business, is such an undervalued and yet sometimes underappreciated part of the path, and it is a way, for better or worse, of weeding out those that are truly passionate about this career and this business and getting to the next level. You really got to take some risk early on and put all your cards on the table, and it tells you a lot about yourself and whether or not this is truly something for you long term.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people definitely question that, but again, for you, it wasn't the end there. You kind of kept moving forward, and the next program you ended up with was UMass Amherst. Again, talk about that program and maybe the difference in your role this time around as opposed to your previous position.
UMass, like, I only spent 1 year there, but I think the point at which I got there couldn't have been better for myself and that program personally. Another just kind of wild story. So I was offered that job, I want to say early July. I was driving a Pontiac Vibe, tiny little car at the time. And I was so excited to get an opportunity elsewhere outside of Michigan and a program that obviously had valued the work and time I had put in elsewhere beforehand enough to hire me. So I pack up my car and I moved east for the first time ever. I think at that point I had only been east of Pennsylvania once as a child. so kind of just a wild, again, kind of all in move, like, hey, we're gonna see if I can sink or swim here. I was so green at the time, but man, what an awesome locker room of players I was fortunate to work with. The program when I got there was just kind of missing some direction and leadership in terms of what the players wanted to get out of a club hockey experience. I was fortunate enough to be working with a locker room full of a lot of upperclassmen that had played at high levels of AAA or prep school hockey and just wanted a little bit more guidance and wanted to kind of thrust that from just being kind of an intramural after school special thing you did to something that they could really feel a part of and feel like the program had direction towards where it was going in the future and something they could be proud of looking back on after graduation. So, in terms of the role, I was hired as the assistant, but by the end of the year, it was kind of became this awkward situation where the players came to me and approached me at the end of the season about kind of taking over as head coach. So that's the way things kind of played out. So going into that summer, I was actually named officially the head coach of the program and started to do things behind the scenes in terms of working the coming season schedule and ordering equipment and things and gearing up for year two. I was also working part-time at the Mullen Center to kind of pay the bills. So I was driving Zamboni. I was doing maintenance. I was part of the changeover crew because at the time the Mullen Center was doing concerts and basketball and the NCAA team played out of the same facility. So I had this crazy schedule. Again, not sleeping a ton, but learning a ton. And it was awesome actually to be around the NCAA Division I program at that time because they were going through a coaching transition. So I got to kind of be a fly on the wall, if you will, and sit in on a lot of their closed practices and just kind of, draw up drills that they were doing and pick assistant coaches' minds on the side and kind of, again, network from low levels that really helped me flourish later on in my career.
I think just being in the building sometimes, like they say, a lot of scouts, especially, I've kind of mentioned that you learn the most just from being around other people in the game and whether it's in the game or sports or just, the overall industry. I think it's great to hear that you were able to kind of go into that role. And also, like you said, it was a big move. I mean, a lot of people aren't willing to kind of pack up their bags and move home base. But, when you do it for the right reasons and kind of commit all in, essentially, when you get there, I think it can be done successfully and for your benefit as well. And, just kind of looking at your career then, as I was going through your resume, kind of before I approached you for the interview, a number of different schools here and kind of like a rapid fire, but maybe we'll just go through each program. You can talk about how you got there and then just give a little bit of information on your time with that hockey team. So maybe start off with Oakland University.
Yeah, absolutely. Oakland, another great experience. Not that I haven't had any experiences I didn't enjoy, fortunately, at this point in my career. But Oakland was another opportunity, opportunity to come back home to Michigan. For those listeners that might not be familiar with Oakland University, again, it's in Rochester, Michigan, which is a Detroit suburb. The program itself had a lot of success before I got there. It was the first program that already had a history that I was joining for the first time in my career prior to getting there. So there were definitely some high expectations to live up to. Oakland had won two national titles before my arrival. But for me, it was also another step up the coaching ladder. MSU was ACHA D3, UMass Amherst was ACHA D2, and now I was fortunate to get this opportunity with Oakland, which was ACHA Division I. It helped that the stipend I was getting was a little bit higher than what I was going to get at UMass. I could also come home and segue right back into full-time work at FedEx. So I wasn't going to have nearly the financial struggles I certainly had in Massachusetts. But definitely the toughest job decision I have made to date was to leave UMass and join Oakland. And that was because I had built such close relationships with the players at UMass. I remember making that call clear as day to the captains and filling them in that I was accepting the open position and it crushed me inside. Fortunately I knew that we had a strong foundation at UMass, with that senior group and they would be okay. And they certainly were. Actually, one of the seniors I had is currently the head coach of the program and they've gone to the national tournament and done some incredible things themselves. But Oakland, we had a lot of talent in that locker room. Another older group that I had, we had a successful year. We made it to the national tournament held in Delaware that year. So kind of continued that success that of the history of Oakland University, ACHA Division I hockey.
Yeah, a big change again for you, kind of moving again. But I think a lot of times people don't realize just the connections that you make with some of these programs are it's difficult to leave, and whether it might be a better decision for your career, and ultimately you felt it was, it still doesn't make it an easy decision, and that was definitely the case there with that program. But continuing on with another program here, Hamilton College, maybe just talk about your time there, and then the experience that you had overall.
So Hamilton was my big break. Call it what it was. At this point, I had coached college hockey at the ACHA level for 3 years. I had done 4 years at the high school level. So I felt like I was not really a seasoned vet, but I had some experience under my belt at this point. So I remember emailing, cold calling, texting, every NCAA program in the United States at this point, at all levels. I was trying to get anybody's ear that would listen to me and give me the time of day, and just honestly give me an opportunity to show what I could add to the program. And fortunately for me, I finally got a call back from Rob Haberbusch, the head coach at Hamilton College. And in 2014, he brought me on as the volunteer coach. And for listeners that might not be familiar with that role in the NCAA, when you are a volunteer coach, like, you're getting zero pay. So it's not an easy decision financially to make, but I knew in order to accomplish my long-term goals, these again were necessary steps that I was going to have to take. So there I was again. I packed up the car and had just come back to Michigan, but packed up the car and moved east again to Clinton, New York, and had an unreal experience at Hamilton. At this point, there are very few people that I would be willing to say that I'd take a bullet for, but Rob Haberbusch is definitely one of those guys in my life. And Hamilton really exposed me to the business side of hockey. There's so many differences between NCAA and ACHA hockey, and I don't mean that in a bad way at all. It's just it's different. Coming to an actual office every day, the use of video and analytics, and you have more people you have to report to. Recruiting process is way more in depth. For a lot of programs, there's just so many more moving parts that I was unfamiliar with. And just when you think you're a pretty good coach and you know some things, you've learned things along the way, you land somewhere new and you're humbled really quickly. And for me, that was definitely Hamilton College. And I had moved 3 times in 3 years at this point. So, fortunately, I had an incredible experience, and I was able to then spin that Hamilton College experience into another very crucial volunteer coaching experience for my development at Union College.
For sure. And we'll get into Union quickly. I just wanted to again touch on the fact that, it's kind of like a situation where a player keeps moving up the ladder. You become the best player at one level and then you go to the next level. And again, you're kind of in a different situation where all of a sudden you're kind of a role player moving into, hopefully developing to that next level. But for you, again, volunteer opportunity is never easy. And I think when coaches are in that search and looking for that position, you see the volunteer coach opportunity come up on a job board. It could be daunting for sure. It's not always the role that you want, but again, like you said, for a lot of people, and a lot of people need to realize that often is the right step, and it can lead to something down the road. And again, you transitioned into another role as you touched on at Union College. So like the previous two here, maybe again talk about the process of kind of joining Union and give some more background on your experience and your role with the program.
Yeah, absolutely. Union was an incredible experience because I got to work with some very, very incredible and talented, brilliant coaching and hockey minds. Just really a star-studded cast. We had Jason Tapp, who's now at Dartmouth, Joe Dumais, who's now doing unbelievable things at Quinnipiac, Dave Baglio, the equipment manager, had prior years at the NHL level with New Jersey Devils, and then our hockey ops guy at the time, Ian Greenwald, who's now on video with New Jersey Devils. Him and I came in at the same time, and then so you take that wealth of experience and knowledge, and you place that under Rick Bennett, who has kind of built the legacy in his own right. So just an unbelievable experience where again, I learned the vast differences now between Division III and Division I hockey. The intensity and the expectations are just so much higher on the end results. When, you know, it's like anything else you do in life. The higher you go, the more eyes are on you. When I got there, Union College had just won a national title 2 years before I arrived. So you can imagine the pressure to coming into a situation like that. Unfortunately, the year didn't play out record wise. I think the way we had wanted. We were a younger team. We had some injury issues throughout the year. I think we finished just above 500, but. At the end of the season, I was actually released from my volunteer coaching role, and that was the first time in kind of this path where it hit me square in the mouth that this is a business, and it wasn't any ill will at all. Rick Bennett, I remember the day he called me in the office and he looked me square in the eye and he said, "Hey, you know, like, you've done an unbelievable job. Every task I gave you, you knocked out of the park this year. But at the end of the day, the program didn't take a step forward like we had hoped. So when that happens, changes have to happen. And you're the low guy on the totem pole. So, you know, this is a decision I have to make from my position." And again, no ill will. I was a little shocked at the time, but Rick and I are still very close. And looking back on it, I just have such a better appreciation and understanding for why that type of situation happens at this level. But it put me in a situation that was unfamiliar territory at that point in my coaching career. Cause now I had gone from climbing up this continuous ladder to landing in a spot where national titles were expectations to at least compete for one. To suddenly I'm interviewing for everything under the sun and I can't land a coaching job. So it was this realization of not only humbling you, but realizing how quickly the rug can be pulled out from under you. And I fortunately was able to finally catch a break and end up at my next stop, SUNY Brockport. Kind of a funny story, thanks in part to Dom Dawes at Stevenson University. Because I had actually interviewed for an assistant job with Dom. And I remember going through that process a couple weeks. It was pretty lengthy. And he called me and gave me the unfortunate news that he was selecting somebody else just due to a little bit more experience, somebody he knew a little bit better networking-wise. But said, "Hey, man, if I could take two people, you would definitely be my second choice." But he left me with a little shred of hope. He said, "I'm pretty sure SUNY Brockport is looking for an assistant coach, and that job has not been posted yet. So here's some contact info for Brian Dickinson. Maybe reach out to him and hopefully you stick somewhere." And fortunately for me, I did.
Yeah. And again, just to kind of break down that entire experience there, it's always interesting to hear that moment where, when someone has a career that's a bit longer and more experienced like yourself, just that moment where maybe, you know, like you said, the rug gets kind of pulled out from underneath you. And in hockey operations, obviously, when things are results driven, especially if you're a volunteer trying to break into a team, that's usually going to be the first place, whether it's, it lies on your shoulders or not. So it's just interesting to hear then that you volunteer or that you were going into another position and trying to get into a role in interviewing and still connections, even though you didn't get that first job, it landed with Brockport there. So, again, let's go into that role now, obviously knowing how that kind of worked out and just give your experience with that program before joining Army West Point.
Yeah, Brockport was, for starters, my first serious paying job. So at this point, I am now years in this career and hadn't really made a dime doing what I was doing. I was just cutting my teeth and grinding and hoping I could pay as many dues as possible to catch somebody's eye. And coming into the Brockport situation, I was now a paid assistant. I was able to get my master's degree there, not free of charge by any means, but certainly helped me, progress both academically and professionally. Working for Brian was such a wonderful experience because Brian was at a point in his career where You know, he's more than willing to kind of give me the reins and explore anything under the sun I wanted to kind of tinker with in terms of bringing in new ideas to a program that, you know, had been around for a while. So, you know, we were more or less co-head coaches. You know, I would think he would look at it that way too. It's just this awesome experience every day coming in and talking hockey with him and different ideas. But it was my first opportunity to really have a voice within the locker room from a bigger role situation where all of a sudden I'm the one out there conducting on ice practices from start to finish. I'm the one putting out practice plans. I'm the one breaking down the video and going over that with the team. I'm obviously on the road recruiting, so many weekends to hopefully to find those diamond in the rough players to elevate this program to an even higher level than it had been in when I got there. So an awesome experience from the standpoint that I got to now do so many things beyond the experiences I had already had under my belt. So just helping me become a more well-rounded coach at the end of the day.
Definitely. And I think experience and the responsibility ultimately is what allows you to kind of grow, especially in a coaching position and, you know, in the NCAA and college setting and with school programs, a lot of times it can really be a great place to generate that learning experience, just because, as you said, recruiting, video breakdown, it often kind of falls on the head coaches or the coaching staff first and foremost. So today, obviously, you're in a position with Army West Point as a director of hockey operations. Finally, maybe walk us through the process of joining that team and then just maybe the opportunity that was in front of you and some of the things that you've experienced thus far.
Sure. And, this situation here with Army was so unique when it first came up. I had actually interviewed for the assistant coaching position that was open that same year, and unfortunately didn't get through that process. They hired another candidate, but I got a call back from our associate head coach Zach McKelvey at the time, who I had kind of struck up this friendship with, just being when I was at Brockport, being on the road. Just you see a lot of the same people in the rinks, and you just start to kind of develop these friendships of talking not only about, you know, players you're recruiting and things you're seeing on the ice and hockey itself, but life itself. So fortunately for me, I had built a pretty good relationship with Zach, and I had, kind of expressed aspirations of getting back to Division I at some point. So Zach reached out and asked if I would be interested in taking a look at this role I'm in now as director of hockey operations. And to be honest, it was a difficult one for me. And anybody else that has been in a situation where they've been a coach for so long and now that title is going to change, that's what made it so difficult, because it meant I was leaving the role of quote coaching. It's a title change. So for me, what was most critical, and I was very upfront in this in my interview process, that I wanted to be involved as much as possible within the NCAA rules, of course, that as if I were a coach on staff, even though I wasn't going to have that title, I wanted to be able to lend, any insight I could provide from my prior experiences, but I also didn't want to miss out on that development piece or being able to build those valuable off-ice relationships with the players. And I think this role of director of hockey operations, when I talk to guys across the country that do this at various programs across the country, like, it's so different. Like, each head coach kind of places different roles on what it means to be the director of hockey operations. So they're not similar in the fact that what I do is the same as what Nick Sergey does at Notre Dame or anybody else across the country that does what we do. But that was very important to me. So Zach McKelvey and Brian Riley both have been so integral in my professional development over the past 3 years and counting. This is probably the single best professional decision I've made to date. The job has just exposed me to so many areas beyond coaching that are involved in the sport. And some probably view that some of those aspects as the boring side of the game, because it's certainly not the flash and excitement of being on the ice for practice or standing on the bench for games. But it really helped me shift my focus towards other possible career avenues I could pursue in hockey outside of coaching.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, the role itself, director of hockey operations with every program is very different. And we've talked with a few people, and I've talked with even more outside of the podcast, and it's every time it's a little bit different, as you said. But you know, some people might view it as boring, but for people like you, people like myself, it's you know, it's an intriguing area and has its benefits as well. So maybe just going into a little bit deeper, just maybe talk about your day to day or week to week, what it looks like, and some of the daily tasks that you deal with.
Yeah, sure. Like, you know, our staff and I, we joke that I'm the Wizard of Oz. You know, I'm the man behind the curtain that makes sure everything in the program runs smoothly, but people hardly ever see me or truly know what I do. So first and foremost, like I serve as our video coach. So we're in a contract with Exos Catapult Software to live capture video. I do our pre-scout breakdown for our opponents. I cut recruiting film so that our assistants can look at prospective student athletes that they've got their eye on. So that's kind of duty number one. But the second duty I have is just as important, if not more so. I get the luxury of overseeing our annual operating budget, which is no small task at all. It actually starts in May. So I put together our budget build, which essentially is I have about 30 different accounting line items where everything we purchase has to plug into one of these areas. So I put together this big proposal and I sit down with our head coach and board of directors and, you know, our AD and we go through and we present that. And then once that's accepted and we get that final operating budget approved, then I'm tracking it all year long. I'm the yes and no guy, which isn't always fun at times. You know, we got coaches that obviously continually want to add to what our players are getting out of the program. So it's my job to make sure that we are staying on task financially, that I can make all of those possibilities happen, but also not stray too far outside of that approved budget. So that's a big role. Now, one of the other areas I do, I book and execute all of our team travel. So everything from the planes, the buses, the hotels, when we go on the road to the team meals, both home and away, whether it's a catered meal or it's, you know, a quick to go individual meals that we're going to eat on the bus on the way back to West Point. I have to obviously get all those contracts and see that those are executed from start to finish. I also oversee the Army Hockey Youth Summer Camp program. Unfortunately, due to COVID-19, we're not running that this year or the previous year, but it's an unbelievable summer camp for youths between the ages of 8 and 16 that get to come spend a week, 5 days at West Point and stay overnight sleeping in the barracks, and they get the experience of what it's kind of like to be a hockey player at West Point. Really cool, fun, and exciting experience. The summer camp's been going on for nearly 40 years, I think, now at this point. So it's very successful. We tend to sell that out every year. But it's, again, no small undertaking. That's a process that starts in September with all the marketing, the advertising for it, and the registration process. I'm answering all the calls and questions from the parents and emails and kind of start to finish. So I see that all the way through from September through execution in July when the camps actually take place. And then some of the other smaller things like the odds and ends, like I do, I'm in charge of our team banquet and our commissioning ceremony, which happens right after graduation, which is an unbelievable day for our senior class who are then commissioned into the United States military. You know, all of those kind of things that big events that happen, but aren't always in the spotlight in terms of the NCAA. Like, I'm, again, the guy that has to see it, those go off without a hitch. So it's a job where you never really, you're never sleeping, put it that way.
No, that's for sure. And, you know, I think just listeners will realize this as well. And again, as I've looked into the position more, you can realize pretty quickly that you have to be definitely someone that's flexible and has had multiple experiences before going into a role like this, because as you said, you're dealing with the video coaching role, which, you know, for someone that's never been in a coaching position is a little bit daunting at first. Even just learning to clip games live with software is a challenge. And then you're looking for the systems breakdown and all that. And all of a sudden then you're kind of being the accountant of the team in a sense, the financials. You got to be the one that's making sure everything's under control, and then organizing, and then event management. And there's so many different hats that have to be worn. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's not as simple as showing up to the games and going home. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I wish it was sometimes.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, I think, you know, it's a very unique role and, you know, has a lot to offer. And even more so with Army West Point, like you said, there's some history there and things are done a little bit differently. And you have that camp that's been very successful for 40 years. And for people who maybe don't always think about Army West Point or who are maybe unfamiliar with the program, just talk about the history of the program in particular and the growth that you've seen in your time there.
Yeah, sure. The history of it, you know, we're at such a fun and exciting time right now in terms of Army West Point hockey. It's our staff is so close that we just all love coming to the office every day, being around each other every day, and I think it's a big part of why we're having success that we've had recently. But when you look back at the history, geez, like you're talking about a program that I think goes all the way back to 1903. So there's so much history there. The top name that comes to mind for myself and a lot of people is Jack Riley, kind of the godfather of Army West Point hockey, who also was an Olympic gold medal winning coach. You know, no small feat, obviously an unbelievable accomplishment. But Jack started, I think, in 1950 as head coach of the Army West Point program. He was then succeeded by his son, Rob Riley, who ran the program for a few years. And now Brian Riley, our head coach at the Reign. So you're talking about a program that has been led by the Riley family since 1950. You know, and there's definitely been some dark days in terms of record through the decades. However, you know, we feel like we've really landed on something consistent in terms of having a foundation of culture and a foothold towards winning an Atlantic Hockey Conference championship here in the very near future. But being at West Point is just such a different and unique experience for myself and anybody that gets to be a part of it, whether you're in athletics or you work elsewhere on campus. It's just so gratifying to come to work and see what the definition and the epitome of teamwork truly is. You know, that's a catchphrase that we always talk about, you know, within athletics, but being at an institution that truly encapsulates what it means to be a part of a team from sun up to sun down is truly something special, you know. And it's from a coaching aspect, it's also such a different and unique recruiting pitch, right? So, you know, a lot of people at first glance, sometimes it's easy to overlook the fact that you have to be a citizen of the United States to come to the academy. So our recruiting pool suddenly is shrunk right away just to American players. And then obviously you mix in the recruiting commitment from the military side of things that you're kind of talking up that aspect and what that means to be a part of a service academy. you know, you've got the pro potential. That's, you know, always a question on any aspiring hockey player coming up through juniors or prep. You know, that's usually the end goal. So we're proud that right now we've been able to move a couple players recently into the pro ranks. It's been huge for our program, and I think speaks very highly of the direction this program's headed. So, you know, on top of that, there's high academics. You got to have pretty high marks to get into West Point. On so you got to be a very intelligent, well-rounded individual that really is just at a different maturity level a lot of times to be able to commit to something so much larger than yourself. And I think a lot of players, when they make that verbal commitment, obviously they're proud and excited that they're going to be a part of it, but it really doesn't hit them until after it's over that it's such a special experience and an opportunity of what they're going to get to do afterwards. It's just an unbelievable experience that I get to be a part of every day.
It seems like the program's really built to kind of bring in the right person first and foremost, excelling off the ice, and it only makes it easier then to very coachable players, very intelligent players that can be successful on the ice at the end of the day, and hopefully for those who have the pro aspirations are able to get there. And like you said, you've seen that recently. And looking at off ice and just kind of the school aspect, you're someone who is also continually enrolling in programs to advance your learning. You talked about doing your master's there earlier in the conversation. How important do you feel it is, or how important it's been for you towards your own development in kind of pursuing these opportunities? And do you feel others, maybe coaches, people in hockey operations, should look to kind of do something similar or even pursue areas outside of the game?
Yeah, it's so critical. I try to attend as many conventions and summer hockey camps as I can, because the key thing is networking, right? Towards professional development and ultimately, hopefully, landing jobs later down the road. You have to put yourself out there, because if you're not continually challenging yourself and expanding your mind to ideas outside of maybe your tiny little comfort zone, then you're going to get stuck in the mud and people are going to pass you by. But the coolest part is you get to meet so many incredible people in hockey, both on the men's and women's side of the sport, that they each have their own unique path and how they got to the point where they are in their career. So it's just pretty inspiring to hear some of those stories while, you're out there swapping different opinions or ideas on everything from the X's and O's to communicating with the college age student athletes. I'd like to continually learn in just so many different areas that the everyday hockey fan probably doesn't even realize is a necessity to what we do every day from an operation standpoint. You factor in all of the insight you're exposed to daily, whether it be from your equipment manager, for us, Ross Chikantic, or our team trainer, Scott Ostrander, or our coaching staff, Doc Z, or team sports psychologist, etc. You have all these people on deck to help your program, but I'm in the fortunate position where I get to be around these people all the time and learn different areas of the business that, again, aren't necessarily just coaching driven. So you have all of these outside forces that play that critical and vital role to the success of your program. And if you're open-minded to learning, you can learn so much from these people in different areas of expertise.
Yeah, and being open-minded, I think, at the end of the day is so key in that process. And like you said, whether it's athletic therapists or equipment managers or mental health performance consultants and all these different areas, especially in your position, like you said, you can really interact with all these people. And people at My Hockey Resource have kind of built a platform which acts as a community where people can learn from individuals, whether video coaches, Ian's one person. I believe I've seen his name come up there a few times in the video coaching, and so many different people within the game who are just looking to share ideas and learn. So for anyone looking to maybe grow their own network or ask specific questions, be sure to check out My Hockey Resource on Twitter and Instagram. Chris, one of the things they talk about specifically on there is certain resources, whether it's books, articles, softwares, conferences, the list is extensive. For you personally, what are some of your favorite resources that you might want to share with listeners today?
Sure. This is kind of a, it's kind of a funny question for me, because I so much more enjoy the casual conversation piece with people who are in the business, similar to what we're doing today. But I do enjoy reading coaching biographies. I like to read biographies from coaches outside of hockey. I like to kind of pull back the layers and see if I can find valuable lessons or even tactics that could be applied in our sport. You can learn something totally new from, whether it be a basketball or a football or a wrestling coach. And maybe it's not necessarily something from an everyday objective that is applied in our sport, but usually with some tweaking, you can find some positive end result out of whatever that lesson you're trying to get across to your team. Just off the top of my head, like a few of the books I've read that have helped kind of generate some different ideas for me. Beyond Basketball by Coach K is really a book driven towards caring for your athletes more than just being chess pieces to generating a winning record. That was important for me early on in my career, because here I am individually on this path where I'm trying to accomplish my own individual goals, that sometimes when you're young and you're hungry, it's easy to kind of overlook some of those bigger things that are going on in your athletes' lives, right? And just connecting with them on a personal level. Another one, Above the Line by Urban Meyer, which is kind of about creating and upholding cultural standards of your team. I actually got the pretty cool experience to meet both Coach K and Urban Meyer here at West Point in the last couple of years. So just incredible experiences to be in front of guys that are just legends in their own right. Quiet Strength by Tony Dungy, it's another one that was a little different for me, because that one kind of explores athletes and oftentimes their important spiritual relationship with faith. It was something that I probably aren't as well-rounded in my own individual personal life, but I know that I have players that I've coached or come into contact with that is a very important piece of their daily lives. So it was important for me to kind of take that in and understand that perspective. Sum It Up by Pat Summitt, obviously a very inspirational insight into kind of the difficulties of keeping your private life separate from your professional life and how that is often blurred. Obviously, Pat was dealing with the diagnosis of Alzheimer's at the time. Again, all of these areas that I think can, when you get outside of your comfort zone and you pull in information and you try to apply it in the best way, because at the end of the day, we're all doing the same thing, right? For us, we're enhancing college athletes' experience, for all the student athletes, and trying to make sure that you have a positive impact on their lives, so that hopefully they'll go out and have an even greater positive influence on others in their daily adult lives afterwards.
Yeah, that's a great point. And to build on, obviously, the resources that you listed there, it's always great to kind of go outside the comfort zone. And I really do ask that question a lot of times, expecting that answer and seeing what people kind of how they think. And so many people have talked about just the importance of looking into things that aren't even sport related. Like you said, it could be something about the workplace and your personal relationship in that blurred line, or getting into spiritual faith and all these different things. So that's very interesting, and even more interesting that you're able to meet Coach K and Meyer there, just two individuals who are very well known, and both have been mentioned on the podcast before. So a little bonus there for you as well. But you mentioned before we got into that question that a lot of times you're one of those people who like to learn from conversation. Just like me, I'm very much on that side of it as well. But maybe just looking at your career to date, go over some of those mentors who you've been able to interact with and who've kind of helped you, and just talk about some of the major lessons that they kind of taught you collectively over time.
I've mentioned these guys already earlier in this podcast, but for me, Rob Haberbusch and Rick Bennett definitely come to the forefront of my mind. They've just done so much for me over the years, whether it be lending an ear for some venting, or giving me some insight and advice from guys that have been in the game much longer than me and have had just about every experience imaginable. And even picking up the phone to make a phone call for me if I might be interviewing for a job and I needed a reference. So those guys, I just can't say enough about what great human beings they are. Zach McKelvey, associate head coach at Army West Point, has become one of my best friends. You know, I tell people that he's the brother I never had, right? So he's just such an intelligent hockey mind, and there's no doubt in my mind he's going to be a great head coach at some point here in the future. But it's just an awesome resource to have when you come into the office every day and kind of be on the same wavelength in terms of where you want to see this program go and the accomplishments that that are out there yet to be obtained. So again, I think, Zach and Coach Riley, Coach Riley is just so much experience and the valuable family atmosphere that he commands while also demanding the very best out of each athlete that plays for our program is such a unique experience. And I think sometimes that's one of the hardest things to develop and not only develop, but maintain year after year is that culture piece. And fortunately, we've done an incredible job in doing so. So those guys, Coach Riley, Zach McKelvey, Rob Haberbusch, and Rick Bennett are probably the biggest mentors for me currently.
Yeah, some great names there as you've kind of broke down the story. We've been able to hear more about them, and I definitely know those names beforehand, but very interesting just to see how those interactions came about and how sometimes it's somebody that you meet later on, but you kind of develop a relationship, that kind of will last further down the road. And I'm sure a lot along the way they've provided you a lot of advice and guidance and, just taught you different things along your journey. So now maybe in a position to talk to someone who's just looking to get into the game or maybe follow a similar path to you and kind of go through the process of moving some different teams, et cetera. What's one final piece of advice that you would give them in hopes that they would be successful in the game?
Sure. I mean, there's so many little nuances, but I think for me, the biggest thing is you got to be willing to bet on yourself, be willing to take chances. Because if you don't, you might end up looking back at things later on, wishing that you would have. And for me, that was the toughest thing. Ultimately, was going all in and stepping away from at that point a career where I was making pretty lucrative financially, and decided, I'm going to pursue this and take a step backwards to hopefully take a couple steps forward. Be willing to talk to everyone. Everyone has a story to tell, and everyone for the most part is willing to help you on your journey. You just got to get out there and again, step outside of your comfort zone. For people like that might be like me, I'm a little bit more of an introvert, if you can believe that or not. But early on, that was difficult for me to get out there and try to create new relationships and do the networking piece. Know that it's going to be a difficult lifestyle year after year. It's really year round. It doesn't necessarily come with a lot of pay or a lot of time off. But if you want to learn the behind the scenes of running a hockey program, then a role such as director of hockey operations is definitely critical towards the skill building part. Whether you want to be a head coach or a scout or a GM or work video or team services later on, I think a role such as the one I'm fortunate enough to be in here at Army just adds so much value, because you get to do so many more hands-on things in terms of running an operation that will be beneficial towards whatever role you're in. And you're going to be forced out of your comfort zone at times, and that's okay. Be willing to, again, put yourself out there. But probably, one of the biggest things that is also enjoy the ride. It's so easy to get caught up on your future individual goals that sometimes you end up not fully enjoying the people and the experience that are right in front of you on a daily basis. And it took me a long time to learn that piece. you know, and looking back on this crazy, unbelievable, definitely different path than most people I come into contact with. We're all trying to get to the same goals, but like I said, everybody has a different road to get there, and mine's certainly unique, to say the least. But there's definitely situations that I look back on in the early years that I wish I would have fully enjoyed a little bit more than I probably did. But now that I'm a little bit more experienced, a little bit further down the road, I've found ways to kind of stay in that moment and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice. A lot of people will definitely, early in the process, just thinking about the future day in and day out. But, taking a second, enjoying the ride, realizing that, if you're not in your comfort zone, it's okay. That's kind of part of the learning process. I think that's great advice, especially for young listeners. And, Chris, with that, I think that's a great way to end this interview. I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation and learning about your story. Like I say, there's certain positions that always interest me, and the director of hockey operations position in the NCAA is one that has always interested me. So just hearing your path through coaching and some of your other roles, it's no surprise you've been successful to where you are today. And I'm sure others will be keen to listen in and see where else you go in the future. So with that, thanks again, and I wish you all the best moving forward.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on, Ryan, to you and the Hockey Minds podcast listeners out there. Like, this is an incredible resource. So definitely continue to tune in, and for anybody, looking for some experience out there, I think Ryan's in the process of looking for a job right now. So give this guy a shot. Like, this guy definitely is an up and coming, brilliant guy out there behind the scenes that can definitely add some value to your program. So don't pass on him. But again, I really am humbled and very appreciative of the opportunity to come on today with you.
Yeah, no, listen, I really appreciate that, and appreciate the kind words and the plug there at the end. But, the show and this process is made by people like you coming on. So once again, thanks for joining me, and take care.
Thanks, Ryan. You too.
One thing that fans within the game, Hockey Minds, and players can agree upon is that when done responsibly, there's nothing better at the end of the day than a cold beer that you enjoy for both its taste and its aroma. And this segment of the Hockey Minds podcast is brought to you by Kitty Vitty Brewery. You can visit their tap room, now open 7 days a week, and their new retail location in St. John's, Newfoundland at 16 Harborview Avenue. If you're one of those people who are maybe looking for some more entertainment, somewhere to sit with friends, you can definitely check out their original location in Kitty Vitty, Newfoundland. Join the Kitty Vitty Craft Club at kittyvittybrewery.ca and give them a follow on social media to keep up to date on the latest brew news. If you're not from Newfoundland and not from the East Coast and you want to get involved, definitely follow them on social media and learn more about their beer, which is great for the casual beer drinking fan and also the beer enthusiast. And stay tuned, because who knows, maybe they'll find their way to get their beer to a location near you. Check out Kitty Vitty Brewery today for more information on their beer, clothing, and all things Kitty Vitty Brewery. I'd like to thank Chris for coming on the podcast and talking about the Army program and his career to date. I'm always intrigued by the Director of Hockey Operations position at the D1 level, so for sharing the behind-the-scenes work of that position in particular, I'd like to once again personally thank him. If you would like to get in touch with Chris to learn about his experiences, I encourage you to reach out to him directly, or you can contact HockeyMindsPodcast@outlook.com, and I can help make that connection for you. Next on the podcast, I'll be joined by Adam West, Assistant General Manager with the Black Falls Bulldogs. Adam has a very unique path in the game, including time in Europe and Finland in particular, which will bring another interesting career path to the listener's ears. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for continually listening in to the podcast and for your support as of late. Be sure to check out our social media platforms as well as our website for more content moving forward. As always, stay safe and all the best.